Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, February 26, 2020. IGAD member countries sign a new protocol for free movement.
By signing this protocol, IGAD are opening a new horizon that can lead the developing and strengthening of all kinds of cooperation between its member states, particularly in light of the regional economic integration and development.
And some special envoys are worried about the lack of security arrangements for the new unity government in South Sudan.
We need to expect some changes, and it has to be visible. And again, I think political space is really, really key. But we also expect the inclusive unity government to really focus now on security arrangements.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Members of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, known as IGAD, have endorsed a protocol on free movement of persons in the IGAD bloc. The move is aimed at fostering regional economic development and integration among member states. IGAD's chairperson says the protocol will create more jobs for young people and encourage cooperation in the region. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
The sectoral ministerial body, which is comprised of ministers of labor and social affairs, peace, internal security and interior from Ethiopia, Djibouti, Somalia, Kenya, Uganda, Sudan and South Sudan, endorsed the draft protocol today in Khartoum. It will provide visa-free entry, rights of residence from IGAD countries and improved border management, according to officials. The new protocol also seeks to harmonize labor laws and establish interstate recognition of economic and professional qualifications for easy mobility of workers among member states. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok, IGAD's current chairman, told ministers in Khartoum today that the new agreement will strengthen trade and development among member states.
By signing this protocol, IGAD are opening a new horizon that can lead the developing and strengthening of all kinds of cooperation between its member states, particularly in light of the regional economic integration and development.
Sudanese Labour Minister Lina Asher says illegal migration is still a big problem in the region, noting Sudan hosts about 2 million refugees from neighbouring countries and about 3 million illegal migrants.
The freedom of movement, once managed properly, shall contribute to regional integration and development acceleration, to achieving our sustainable development agenda. Individuals are constantly moving in unmodified ways for several reasons, including conflicts, illegitimate migration and infrastructure pressures, calls upon us to manage this properly.
Mary Hilary Wani, the Undersecretary of the Ministry of Labour in South Sudan, says the agreement will help South Sudan gain experience in trade cooperation and border control. She says once the visa-free movement is approved, she expects illegal migration to go down.
Our borders are open to the neighbouring states and beyond. So actually the protocol will be regulating even this movement. The irregular migration will not be there, but it will be regularized. The border posts will be there so that at least for everybody coming to the country, the data will be in place.
Mwesigwa Rukutana, Minister of State Labor in Uganda, says Ugandans looked forward to implementing the agreement.
We have a lot of food and cash crops to export. The Ugandan population know that if we widen the market, to wider markets like the IGAD community, they would definitely benefit because they are very anxious traders. They would seek opportunities everywhere.
The signed document will be sent to IGAD Council of Ministers of Foreign Affairs in the coming days for adoption before it is presented to IGAD heads of state over the next few weeks, according to officials. For VOA News, I am Michael Atiid in Khartoum.
Some top officials, including special envoys in South Sudan, warned that the lack of security arrangement in Juba could pose a problem for the new government. The envoys say the failure to fully implement the pre-transitional security arrangements on time could affect the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
The parties have sent their forces to cantonment sites but have yet to complete the selecting, screening, training and redeployment of their forces, all key components of security arrangements. SPLMIO Secretary for Foreign Affairs Stephen Kwal says while the parties are trying to complete forming the unity government, failure to implement all security arrangements remains a threat to sustaining the new government.
Transitional security arrangement is a pre-transitional activity. There is nothing like power sharing without security sharing. And that is the principle of the agreement. So it is a concern.
Efforts to reach South Sudan's military spokesman for comment were unsuccessful as his phone numbers were turned off. Sif Kasparsen, the Norwegian ambassador to South Sudan, describes last weekend's swearing-in of South Sudan's five vice presidents as a big step forward in the implementing the peace deal, but as he says, Western governments want to see practical steps being taken to resolve all outstanding issues.
We need to expect some changes, and it has to be visible. And again, I think political space is really, really key. But we also expect the inclusive unity government to really focus now on security arrangements, which is key. So we need to see some progress on that in particular.
IGAD's special envoy to South Sudan, Ismail Weiss, said at a news conference Tuesday that implementing security arrangements are behind schedule due in part to a shortage of funds.
These funds was made available, and from there on, the activities of the unification of forces and transitional security arrangements went really very fast. We tried to mobilize international support.
The agreement requires that security arrangements be implemented during the pre-transitional period before a unity government is formed. Weiss agrees security arrangements must be implemented, but says a little more time is needed.
It is now time also to train the forces and to take the necessary time so that this unification of forces takes place in a proper way, not in a rush and quick manner.
A 3,000-strong unified VIP protection force has been trained but is yet to be deployed, according to government officials. Major General Bior Lick, a top security official with the former detainees, one of the parties to the peace deal, says the incomplete implementation of the security arrangements is not a big deal.
There is no concern because all the leadership of the FBIO and the government had agreed that the other security arrangements will be completed. Meanwhile, we are in the government, and I think that one will be solved by the leadership level between the first vice president and the president of the republic, and they will continue to solve all the other security arrangements.
Meanwhile, a special envoy Weiss says the parties are working to identify the members they want nominated to the cabinet. President Salva Kiir dissolved the old transitional government a day before the February 22nd deadline to form the unity government. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
A spokesman for the Rebel National Salvation Front says his group is opposed to the formation of the unity government since the parties failed to address the root causes of the conflict and implement security arrangements. Lasuba Memo has this report for VOA from Juba.
NASA spokesperson Samuel Suba says parties to the revitalized peace deal rushed to form a unity government without implementing key transitional activities, especially security arrangements.
They've rushed in and then created they created the government without addressing the fundamental issue of the security. And when we talk about building a new force that each and every South Sudanese must look themselves into that force, it needs a process of building it. It is not a matter of just collecting some militias here and there and claim that there's the training of it. It is not a matter of only claiming some DAPs of protection rather creating a force for the protection of DAPs.
Suba also says the decision by the other parties to form a unity government undermines earlier demands by his group for a federal system of governance and calls for perpetrators of abuse to be brought to justice. Suba says those in government are fighting over positions of power, not reform.
Now you can see how they are fighting on the few things that they are talking about. So those are just those things that they are doing in Juba. It is just a postponement of the war, but it's not about peace.
The NAS, which is led by former Army General Thomas Cirillo, is part of the South Sudan Opposition Movement Alliance, a coalition of 9 opposition groups that refused to sign the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement. Other members of the alliance are the South Sudan United Front, led by Paul Malong, and Real Sudan People's Liberation Movement, or RSPLM, headed by Pagana Mum. Smile Wise, IGAD's special envoy to the South Sudan peace process, says it's up to the non-signatories if they want to join the government.
What we say is very clear. People and parties have the right to decide whether they should be part and parcel of the agreement or they stay outside the agreement. Nobody is forced to sign anything. That's number one. Number two, it also says very clear they should be respecting the cessation hostility agreement so that a dialogue and discussion is the way and not gun fighting.
2 weeks ago, SOMA members agreed to be part of ceasefire and transitional security arrangements monitoring mechanism, the body monitoring implementation of the ceasefire agreement. According to the security arrangements, SOMA will only take part in security meetings through video conferencing. Suba says his group will welcome future talks with the new government as long as the group's grievances are addressed.
It doesn't matter. For us, we recommitted ourselves to the cessation of hostilities, and it will, of course, definitely lead us to the second round of the negotiation, which is, of course, looking at the root causes of the conflict. So this is what we are pursuing with CNDGT.
Smile says NASA still has the privilege to join the peace process because it was a member of the high-level revitalized forum in Khartoum when it pulled out of the talks. In its first meeting today, the presidency, which comprises of President Salva Kiir and the 5 vice presidents, says the unity government expects a breakthrough in an upcoming meeting with SOMA in Rome. The presidency is also calling on the whole out groups to join the peace process. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a South Sudanese official defends the human rights record of his country. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
tell us something that annoys you.
When someone takes what they know you love for granted, something like acting, people know I like to act, but they take it for granted because they know no matter what, they will get you to do it. And it really annoys me because they know you love it that much, yet they treat you anyhow.
Poverty. That's one, straight up poverty. Like we now, I can say the youth, or even generally what is in the country, it's poverty totally. The rich are getting more richer, and the ones who are poor, there is no change. It's only by luck.
Something that annoys me is when I help somebody, doesn't show appreciation. When I help somebody, I know I don't have, but because of love, and that person failed to appreciate.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A senior South Sudanese official has rejected criticism that his country is a serious violator of human rights. In a speech to the UN Human Rights Council, the official says his government is making efforts to improve human rights records in the country. Lisa Schlein has more for VOA from the Human Rights Council session in Geneva.
Director General for Multilateral Affairs of South Sudan, Samuel Luate Lominsuk, praises the decisions and compromises made by his government. He says this has enabled the formation of a national unity government in the interest of sustainable peace and stability. He says his government is enforcing the agreement by negotiating peace with the South Sudan Opposition Alliance. At the same time, he says peace talks taking place with Sudan and the capital Juba are making progress. He says efforts to improve the human rights situation in his country are moving ahead. And this, he says, belies the UN Council's depiction of South Sudan as the worst country on earth in terms of human rights violations. He says this is contrary to the realities on the ground.
My government would like to reiterate that South Sudan has deep-rooted traditions and norms which compel us to respect one another in all aspects of life. Consequently, anyone who commits a crime touching a woman's dignity is severely punished.
A report published last week by the UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan describes in detail what it calls the widespread and pervasive sexual and gender-based violence in the country. The report accuses both the government and opposition of deliberately starving the population as a tactic of war. The UN Commission is scathing in its criticism of the government, which it says is riddled with corruption. The South Sudanese government did not respond to the report at the time of its release, and during his address to the council, Lominsuk also did not acknowledge the report and its findings. Instead, he continued to stress the positive developments and improvements in the human rights situation in this country. He called on the council to remove South Sudan from Item 4, which looks into human rights abuses in specific countries reserved for those deemed to be the worst violators. Countries that will come up for review under that item during this month-long session include North Korea, Myanmar, South Sudan, Iran, Burundi, Syria, and Venezuela. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Residents of Rouen County in Unity State have petitioned the Supreme Court to terminate contracts with oil companies operating in the area. The community is also demanding millions of dollars in compensation for damages caused by oil companies. Viola Elias reports for VOA from Juba.
Lawyers representing the Rouen community filed a petition at the Supreme Court 3 weeks ago following what they call repeated human rights violation by oil companies who failed to maintain their pipelines, which have burst numerous times and polluted the surrounding land and water. The group says the resulting pollution have caused irreparable harm in Rouen, Northern Leech and Southern Leech counties. Media report says the oil leaks have caused deformities in newborns, children being born prematurely, and deaths. Legal advocate Peter Ayei, executive director for the local human rights organization Advocates Without Borders, says the activities of the Greater Pioneer Operating Company, or GPOC, a consortium of oil companies owned by China, Indian, Malaysia, and South Sudan, violated residents' right to life and their rights to clean water.
We are claiming compensation on behalf of the people of Rouen State. Now, for time being, we are talking about $500 million US dollar, but it should have been more we are going even to amend the petition. You know, this damage has been caused in 1999, and that was before the separation of South Sudan. The oil is being taken from Ruwe. The people are suffering.
Rueng's lawyer, Teji Didau Deng, says GPOC has never performed an environmental assessment since it began oil exploration in the area in 1998 and has failed to adhere to international standards during oil exploration in Rueng. Deng says the oil consortium also failed to provide social services to local communities per its agreement.
For the 21-year-old, even the citizen of that state, of Rueng state, they did not receive any percentage from the oil completely, leave alone the social services which are supposed to be provided by the exploring company in the area.
Philip Anyang, an advocate representing two petitioners against GPOC at the Supreme Court, says company executives repeatedly failed to carry out their duties under the 2012 Petroleum Act, which requires the consortium to protect residents' lives and protect and preserve the surrounding land and water. Anyang says the court must consider the urgency of the matter and issue a preliminary order to form another investigative panel within the next 2 weeks.
We hope that justice will take its course. The victims of Rueng oil pollution and the victims that have been displaced, people have been affected by the oil pollution on the ground.
Last year, governors of the Greater Upper Nile region called for a review of all contracts signed with oil companies before South Sudan declare its independence. Ayeye and Anyang say some of the deals signed between oil companies and South Sudanese authorities before South Sudan became a country did not address environmental pollution caused by repeated oil leaks or welfare of local communities. Beside GPOC, the Petroleum Ministry and the state-owned Nile Petroleum Corporation, or NILEPET, are also naming the petition. Akol Nyong Akol, Executive Secretary of the Petroleum Ministry, said in a text message his ministry is aware of the petition and will address it through an environmental audit that was launched last year. Repeated phone calls to GPOC Vice President Majaka Rob for comment went unanswered. Efforts to meet Arop in his office were also unsuccessful, as the staff in his office said he was too busy. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Parts of northern Italy are on lockdown following an outbreak of the coronavirus, or COVID-19 as it's now known, with at least 7 deaths in the region. Sudden outbreaks in recent days from South Korea to Iran to Italy have raised fears that the virus, which originated in China, will spread around the world. A new report warns that Southeast Asian and Sub-Saharan African economies could be badly hit, even if there are no outbreaks there. Henry Ridgewell has the story for VOA from London.
Northern Italy is the epicenter of Europe's coronavirus outbreak. In the regions of Lombardy and Veneto, several small towns have been put on lockdown and 50,000 people have been told to stay at home. Supermarket shelves are emptying of basic goods, even in big cities like Milan. Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte urged citizens to heed government advice. He said this discomfort and sacrifice, which for now is intended for 14 days, I hope will prove to be effective to contain the spread of the virus. But with new cases reported in other Italian regions and in Spain and Switzerland, health authorities are struggling to contain the virus. Virologist Dr. Stergios Moskos of Britain's University of Northumbria says it's vital people do all they can to stop its spread.
The containment procedure is there to effectively dampen down the intensity of transmission and stretch it out, so to prevent an overload in healthcare settings.
Iran is one of the worst affected nations outside China, with hundreds of infections and more than a dozen confirmed deaths. South Korea is also badly hit, and the US government has advised against all non-essential travel there. In China, where the virus first appeared in late December, infections have topped 77,000, with more than 2,500 deaths. Again, Dr. Stergios Mostios.
the window of opportunity for stopping this disease from becoming a pandemic is narrowing very fast. The entire community at the moment is anticipating this will eventually develop into a pandemic. However, I have to point out that in the past we've had similar fears, and what has happened is that viruses just die away.
The global economic cost could hit $360 billion, according to a report from the Overseas Development Institute, or ODI, which warns sub-Saharan Africa stands to lose $4 billion in export revenue. Oil and copper prices are sharply down, and big exporters to China, such as Angola, are suffering. The ODI says Sri Lanka, Vietnam, and the Philippines will be worst hit. Sherilyn Raga is co-author of the report.
Everybody's looking back at the SARS impact in 2003. But of course, if we look back, China is now four times bigger than during the time of the SARS outbreak. And it's more connected to the world now through global value chains and manufacturing sector.
Scientists are racing to produce a vaccine for the virus, with the first human trial scheduled for April. By then, the COVID-19 outbreak could be a full pandemic, with serious consequences for national health systems and the global economy. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of our top stories with Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. IGAD approved a draft protocol allowing people to move about freely between IGAD countries. The deal is meant to bolster regional economic development and ease immigration among member states. The ministerial body of the regional bloc, which includes Sudan and South Sudan, endorsed the protocol today in Khartoum. Despite a swearing-in ceremony for the unity government last weekend, the parties to the peace deal are far behind schedule in implementing all security arrangements, and some regional officials say that could mean trouble ahead for the new government. The parties have sent their forces to cantonment sites but have yet to complete the selecting, screening, and training of forces. And finally, residents of Unity State's Rueng County petitioned the Supreme Court to terminate all oil contracts with consortium GPOC and other oil companies with pipelines in the area. Residents are also demanding millions of dollars in compensation for the damages caused by oil companies. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Amba by Benjamin Laxin.
Amba ye, amba ye ye, amba ye ye, patilipa.
Amba ye ye, amba ye ye, amba ye ye, patilipa.
Ngira na sodomogo, ngira na sodomogo, ngira na sodomogo, beli bibilo gandara.
Amba ye ye, amba ye ye. Amba ye ye patilipa.
Ngrana kekeli, ngrana kekeli, ngrana kekeli, beti kasreketi.
Amba ye ye, amba ye ye, amba ye ye patilipa.
Ngrana rutongo, ngrana rutongo, ngrana rutongo, kubona amba.
Amba ye ye, amba ye ye, amba ye ye patilipa.
Ngalaga kuden amba bero, ku amba langodi kiko. Ngaji kine mindo lenga beri Ngiro la suda beti manyan Kote ibakana Patile palo lele kike dingi ki Kabiku rurunga Nyo amba Doti kina ngaji kine lenga beri Amba ye ye, amba ye ye Amba ye ye, patilipa
Amba ye ye, amba ye ye Amba ye ye, patilipa
Ngira na sodomogo, ngira na sodomogo Ngira na sodomogo, beli bibilo gandara
Amba ye ye, amba ye ye Amba ye ye, patilipa
Ngira na kekeli, ngira na kekeli Ngira na kekeli, beti kasreketi
Amba ye ye, amba ye ye Amba ye ye, patilipa
Ngira na rutongo, ngira na rutongo Ngira na rutongo, kubona amba
Amba ye ye, amba ye ye Amba ye ye, patilipa
We have have been listening to Benjamin Laksin with the song Amba. I wish I could speak some Kakwa language to translate the meaning of that song for you. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you allowing us into your vehicles and homes. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.